Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by outsourcing around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. So when you buy from American Giant, you're taking a stand for hardworking people, local communities, and quality clothes. American Giant directly supports American manufacturers and ensures you aren't footing that tariff bill. Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Hello and welcome to Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Got Kurt with a funny just before I pressed record. You'll never know. The people out there will never know. The Milwaukee Brewers, Kurt, had a journey of a week. This one, hard to put into words, actually. Kurt Hoag from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, my colleague, joins me here to discuss it. The Milwaukee Brewers are your National League Central champions for the second straight year, the third time in 4 years. What a time to be a Milwaukee Brewers fan. They clinched it in pretty dramatic fashion. It was an awesome scene at American Family Field. They then proceeded to go into hibernation for 3 games against a team they could very well see right back here in the first round of the playoffs, the Arizona Diamondbacks. That extended through the fourth inning on Sunday, and then everything changed, and they ended up winning a wild game, repeating in reverse what happened to them the preceding Sunday, a ridiculous, crazy 10-9 game it was Diamondbacks who got the one last Sunday. It's the Brewers who get this one. We have to discuss all of that and looking ahead, of course, to the playoffs. The Brewers almost certainly not going to get a first-round bye. Their chance is less than 1% if Fangraphs is to be trusted that they can bypass Philadelphia or Los Angeles. It's not going to happen. They will be hosting a series, what is that, October 1st to October 3rd, hopefully, the 3rd if necessary. And that's either going to be the Mets, the Diamondbacks, or the Atlanta Braves at this point. So, Kurt, we will talk about which opponent I think makes the most sense for the Milwaukee Brewers, the best possible matchup. And I want to bring that up first because they just played this Arizona Diamondbacks team, the best offense in baseball. We'll talk specifically about Sunday at some point here, but this team, I mean, the Brewers maybe got the best of them in Arizona, but they are very difficult to keep down. Brandon Pfaadt threw better than I think he's thrown all year long in a dominant performance on Thursday. They do have a little bit of starting pitching along with Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly. They strike me as a terrible matchup for the Milwaukee Brewers. How do you see this playing out here? We're down now to 3 teams. It's probably going to be the Mets or the Diamondbacks, quite honestly. Which one strikes you as the better option? Are you like me that the Diamondbacks scare you if you're a Brewers fan?
Yeah, was it just like PTSD vibes all weekend that made what the Diamondbacks were doing so seemingly meaningful? I mean, the Brewers were out of it. They clinched the division. They're out of the race for the bye. Their results really didn't matter this weekend. Yet it felt like the Diamondbacks coming into their house and just absolutely smashing them was bad news. But at the end of the day, look, it probably doesn't matter. It's going to be a best of 3 series. But on the other hand, like, there is something about this Diamondbacks team that I think you don't want to see. And it's probably in the depth of the offense. They just have the chess pieces to win like every strategic battle you could possibly want. Their bullpen has incredible arms from both the left and right side. The Brewers did get to Justin Martinez today, and Churio got to Stunner. Him on Sunday as well. But yeah, incredible. He came in and, well, they kind of dinked and dunked him to death. But nevertheless, they got to him. But the offense, it's you want to pinch hit or you want to bring in a lefty for like Jock Peterson? Okay, here's Randall Grichuk. You want to bring in a lefty for Jake McCarthy? Okay, here's Grichuk. You start a lefty? Okay, Jock Peterson will come off. Like, they just have so many options coming in. Pavin Smith, Lourdes Gurriel, McCarthy, Gabriel Moreno, might be able to come off the bench or something like that. Like, they are just loaded with the right chess pieces, and that offense is something else, especially when Corbin Carroll is clicking. I mean, Ketel Marte, like, it feels like getting him out is requires an amazing diving play by Joey Ortiz, and that's the only way to get him out. But ultimately, I do think that the aura around the Arizona Diamondbacks centers on two games that were played last October, where they kicked the Brewers' butts, and they came here in September and kicked the Brewers' butts around the same time of year at the same ballpark, and that brought about bad vibes. Ultimately, probably doesn't matter who they would play. I mean, the Mets are actually the hottest team in baseball, so this wild card race, JR, feels different than the AL, where you have the Tigers, who are really, really hot, but like probably not that great of a team, and then the Twins and Royals, who are trying to out-sputter each other down the finish line. Like, their engines have shut off. They're stuck in the middle of the lake, and they're like paddling with their hands to try to get to the dock.
What an interesting way.
Has that happened? That's never happened to you?
Paddling to the dock? No, I don't go on open water if I can help it. If I am on open water, something has gone horribly wrong, Kurt. I'm probably trying to run from a fire. Can I swim? I mean, that's always a really fascinating question. Can I swim? Yes, in the technical sense, I can swim. I know how to like use my hands, arms, and legs appropriately. I have no doubt that any current whatsoever, if it's enough to carry like a paper boat, would take me down in a heartbeat. I am not an elegant nor a strong swimmer. But can I do it? Sure.
Buoyancy is not your strength.
No, I sink like a rock. I am a large man, not very athletic. After about 5 minutes of swimming, this is a true story, Kurt. I was once, I was at a camp. We were doing like an amazing race sort of thing. That's kind of, it was more like an American Gladiators. It's a series of events. And we did a kayak race, and the lake is not super deep, but I was kayaking. I was doing quite well, actually. I think I'm okay at kayaking, but I flipped the boat and I went down into the water. I foolishly was not wearing a life jacket, even though it makes all the sense in the world for somebody of my swimming ability to be wearing one.
Life jacket.
Yeah, kids do that. And then I tried to save the boat, you know, like from floating away, because it was in the middle of the lake. It's a very shallow lake. I was very close to shore, but I'm trying to like do all this, I get so tired so fast, and I realize, holy smokes, I'm gonna die like 25 to 30 yards from shore because I can't move anymore. So eventually, you know, I was able to just kind of hang onto the kayak. People got me. It was fine. It wasn't even that risky. But like in the moment, it's like, my God, I'm so bad at swimming that I just about used up all the energy I had in like the first 2 minutes of just trying to move around. Wear a life jacket, kids. That's the moral of that story. Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, the wild card race, right?
Sure.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. And what a fascinating way that the schedule has laid out for the Brewers. They faced, of course, the Phillies. This is the team they clinched against. That is a team that will be the one or two seed in the National League. They get the Diamondbacks. Then they get the Mets on the last three games of the season and could very easily be in a situation based on what happens in those games, just having the Mets stay in town for two more games after a day off on October 1st and October 2nd in the playoffs. And then the fascinating situation of what do they do in those games? Who do they throw? How hard do they play? What if the Mets, you know, are fighting for their lives, which they will be, you know, like how much do the Brewers owe it to the game, in quotes, to play at full bore, full capacity? Like all of that stuff comes up very, it's a big mishmash, and I think we just have to get to the games before we know some of those answers. But I don't know if that's an advantage or a disadvantage to have to play these teams that they just were in your park, just in your clubhouse. I think it strikes me that that would be a disadvantage. Do you think it's either? I mean, maybe it's just, we always try to make correlation with what happens in the postseason and the regular season. It's often just so stupid to do that. But how do you see the schedule as a detriment to what the Brewers are going to try to do here?
I think it's better than like going into the playoffs with the Pirates and the Rockies and the Marlins. Like you get a lot of information on these guys. And sure, the Diamondbacks have probably just the same amount of information on the Brewers as the Brewers did the Diamondbacks. So who knows what the real advantage is there. I don't think it ultimately matters a ton, but it is an interesting question of like, what does the last week look like? How do the Brewers factor into this with, like you said, who they pitch coming up against the Mets? They're probably like, they've earned the right to line things up exactly as they want. That means like looking forward to that weekend, Colin Ray, maybe they'll call someone up for a Sunday game. Like Tobias Myers' schedule, like his spot would line up for that last Sunday. And that would strike me as a little surprising unless he's their preferred game one NLDS starter. So they might just be throwing whoever's available at the Mets. But the thing the Brewers, you probably want, right, is like you want the Braves to be in contention as long as possible, because that makes the Mets or the Diamondbacks or whoever you play, that makes yes. them keep throwing their guys as long as possible. But on the other hand, it feels kind of like you want the Mets to win almost, because like we've talked about with the Diamondbacks, that might be the matchup you want to avoid, because it just seems like it's not a great head-to-head for the Brewers. So I don't know, root for whatever you want. It's not going to matter. It's not going to matter in 1 week when Freddie Peralta gets the ball. And that is the determining factor on if the Brewers win the game or not.
Yeah, well, here's my mentality. An 84-win Arizona Diamondbacks team came to American Family Field last year and beat them pretty soundly. So, like,
yeah,
all these teams are going to be good, right?
It ultimately doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Unless you can tell me which team won't be hot. If you can do that, then we're cooking.
Well, and that leads me to this Brewers team and how they played against Arizona. You know, like I think after a team clinches, I don't even know what the data says. There's probably no difference in how they play the next game or two or three games after they clinch. But like you said, they're in an unusual position here where, yes, technically they still were in a fight for a first round bye, but that was going to be pretty elusive. That was going to be a really hard thing to secure, especially without tiebreakers. So they really don't have anything to play for. They certainly didn't look like they had anything to play for on Thursday when two batters, a grand total of, reached base against the Diamondbacks. They showed a little fight, had a good inning with three homers on Friday, but then didn't score in any of the other innings and subsequently lost that one as well. And then on, that was actually Friday. And then Saturday, once again, two batters and nothing more. Eight innings in which they went 1-2-3. Horrible, right? And then they look really bad for the first few innings on Sunday. They go behind 8-0. And then, oh gosh, they wake up and not only do they score some runs, they win the game. They overcome an 8-run deficit for the first time since 2004. I'm having a hard time knowing what this team is still, which I guess an inconsistent baseball team is just what all the teams are, really. But like, you know, I after the third Diamondbacks loss, it's like, man, they really lost whatever they had. They lost their edge and their mojo, and how are they going to get it back? And then I come out of Sunday thinking, oh, this team could play with anybody. They could score runs at will.com. .com, isn't it? Comma is what I was going to say. Comma. That's an old 100 court thing. But Kurt, I don't know. I think you just have to throw those Diamondbacks games out. I mean, obviously they are prone to offensive slumps, but what team isn't? And I just don't think that is truly who they are. I certainly don't think 10 runs and five innings is who they are either. But I don't know. Do you, what level of danger, I guess, were you feeling when you saw this team play against Arizona?
It's not so much like, I wasn't worried about like their effort levels or if they were mailing it in and, you know, are they going to be able to ratchet it up? The concern that I had watching these games was like, does it have to be one of three guys making all the offense happen? That's probably not fair to Garrett Mitchell, because Garrett Mitchell has made the offense happen. So maybe one of four guys that has to make the offense happen. That's Churio, that's Adames, that's Contreras. Now that changed a little bit in Sunday's game. A lot of different guys came through with hits. No one, you know, not a ton of like super hard contact from a lot of guys, no home runs, but ultimately it feels like, you know what? It's just going to have to be those four. Like there can be some contributions from other people and that will be big, but like, the thing that you're going to have to bank on with this offense is if those four guys hit, they'll be fine. If they don't, you just have a lot of questions on where this is going to come from. Are Sal Frelick and Joey Ortiz and Blake Perkins going to be able to string together three straight singles? Because not a lot of extra base hits coming from that spot in the lineup. Like, is Gary Sanchez capable of, you know, like, is he snapping out of this funk? Jake Bowers, a couple of huge hits this week. One missile to win. Actually, I guess they'd won the division, but to cap off a division winning day, a little infield hit. But other than that, a lot of strikeouts, no hard contact. So yeah, I think that was my concern mostly from these Diamondbacks games. Watching Frankie Montas for sure get lit up was alarming because he's probably your game two guy. I guess they could change that, you know, at any point. It's not set in stone.
But to whom? I mean, Colin Ray's been lit up too. You know,
Tobias Myers. Yeah,
I guess.
But ultimately, like, Montas is the veteran in this situation. Tobias Myers is a rookie who was in Double A last year. So I don't know if he's the guy, you know, that follows Freddy Peralta. Legitimate concerns, but I think you do also have to zoom out and see this team played 5-5 in this 10-game stretch against the Diamondbacks, Phillies, and Diamondbacks, which was probably the toughest stretch on their schedule this year. And you'll take that. You know, they went 2-2 against the Dodgers when they came here. You take that. For the most part, they've played just fine against good teams. So, you know, you can read into those three crappy games as much as you want. But ultimately, they've been pretty good against good teams.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And now, because of this wild comeback on Sunday, they have not lost four games in a row this season. They are running out of time to do so. They're the only team in the big leagues and have been for quite some time to have not lost four consecutive games this year. Of course, in the playoff series, up to two. Doesn't get you much, doesn't buy you anything, but it is notable that they just aren't out of it. You know, like at any point, they really just don't skid to the degree that they get out of it. That is not necessarily how I would have felt vibes wise about the 2023 team either, even though they also were pretty good at not getting into those big losing streaks. So, probably not even a data point worth discussing, to be honest, now that I have. Let's go back to the clinch. Let's talk about that before we look forward to some of the decisions awaiting them as they get into the playoffs. A lot of scenes, good stuff. You know, very poetically, the Chicago Cubs losing to Oakland in come-from-ahead fashion earlier that day on Wednesday, clinched it officially for the Brewers, Craig Counsell's Chicago Cubs. Tough year. The Milwaukee Brewers knew going into that game against the Phillies that they were set. They still needed that win. You know, at the time, I think you could still see a pretty good pathway to that first-round bye. You know, maybe not an easy one, but a possibility there. And they win 2-1 in walk-off fashion. Jake Bowers, as you said, with the line drive. Jackson Chourio with a triple leading off that ninth inning. A very exciting game. And then that leads immediately into a champagne celebration. Just recount it for me. What were some of the we've said vibes already 70 times on this podcast, but what were some of the things that you take away from this one? They've gotten used to these. They've done a few champagne celebrations. Was this what made this one special or interesting in your mind?
It was different. It felt different. New group of guys, for a large part, like definitely a moment to reflect on that. The fact that this was not supposed to happen, we didn't think it was going to happen unless you had some opinions that you didn't, you know, let on this podcast. We didn't think this team was going to win the division. Division's not good. Maybe they had a shot, no. But we're not the team we were picking. It's just a nice moment to reflect on that success. I think that's important to do. Now, ultimately, all that's going to matter this year is what they do in a week. I don't think that division banners are going to this one carries significance for sure, but like long-term, I don't know if it's going to satisfy the people. They want more. They want playoff wins. They want to not go 1-9 in their last 10 playoff games. But in the moment, for sure, you got to get to the dance to have a chance in the dance. And they for sure have gotten to the dance, and they've gotten there in a way that is unique to this team. They're great on defense, but I'm not entirely sure they're like super elite in any other area besides having Devin Williams pitch the ninth. It's just been a really compelling team to watch. The way Pat Murphy has guided them along, and you can say whatever you want about his, you know, decisions with the bullpen, and we have said those things throughout this season, but there's no denying that they sort of just take on his identity, and that is maybe the biggest story about this team this year, and a significant reason. You can't put numbers on it. We all want to put numbers on it. I want to put numbers on it, but it's maybe the most significant reason why they're in this spot now.
I'm going to abstain from this next part of the conversation because I actually have a vote for manager of the year.
I do.
Very excited. I want your take on that race.
Where does Bud Black fit in your
ballot? He is a name that I am familiar with and probably won't be writing down. I don't know.
If I had AL manager of the year vote, I would do Pedro Grifol because I'm so sorry. I just feel bad for him.
You deserve like
he's not
something.
He's not good at his job. Also, it would be funny.
He was set up to fail, much like many other White Sox managers before him. It's well, I don't know about Tony La Russa being set up to fail. I think that was the setup to fail. So I don't know, man. That was it's been rough for the White Sox. They you know, like I don't no love lost over Chicago, but those fans deserve better. Anyway, where was I? Oh, I think a lot of people feel like it's a runaway that Pat Murphy has this thing sewn up, and certainly in a narrative award, you can obviously make the case for him. What do you think? Do you think that's a done deal? Like how would you look at that race right now?
I think Mike Schilt will probably get some votes, but it has to be Pat Murphy, right? I mean, this is a narrative vote. As much as we could try to put a million different things on it, this is a narrative vote that basically goes to who is the manager of the team we are most wrong about. But then Murphy's also gotten, you know, significant attention nationally this year. You know, people that talk about the Brewers, they pretty much talk about a couple of things, and Jackson Chourio's one and Pat Murphy's the other, and they traded Corbin Burns. That's the other one. It should probably be Pat Murphy. I thought Council probably should have won it at least once. Maybe like 2018 was probably the year for him to do so. 2019 also guiding that team to the playoffs after they lost Yelich was some good managing and the way he managed on the stretch. But yeah, it's like, again, you can't put a number on this with Murph, but it is impossible to watch them up close day to day and not see the fingerprints all over and like, they do play with a true identity. I don't know how many Brewers teams have passed, like had, you know, that specific of a knowledge of like who they are. And sometimes JR that leads to too dang much bunting, but you know what? Sometimes it leads to 90 plus wins in a division title.
The bunting is,
they got to stop the bunting. They got to stop it.
I think that if we were to accumulate the numbers and friend of show Ryan Topp has done some of that actually. And, you know, I think we'll find that the Brewers are not markedly out of whack with what's going on around Major League Baseball. Or even if they are a little bit north of it, it's not dramatic. Like it's a very small percentage of the outs that they've made, but it's a little discouraging that we still see that pop up in places where it just does not make sense specifically. And that's not necessarily something.
The way it sits in our stomachs is disproportional to the actual impact it has. But like Eric Haas bunting down, what, two or down one or two early Saturday with two on, like what? I don't know if I don't think that one's coming from the dugout, but where is this coming from? Why? I've never seen a cavalcade of 20 somethings be this enamored with dropping down bunts.
Yeah. And that's some of the stuff we'll never know. Were they trying for a hit? Were they doing it on their own? Was it coming from the dugout? I mean, some of those that we can kind of suss out in the individual moments, but we don't have data to suggest like all of it. We don't even know. The big one that was last week where they bunted leading off an extra inning on the road. That makes no sense to me. One run, playing for one run
we didn't really get to, well, I guess I wasn't on the pod, so of course we didn't get to it, but I didn't get to it really in my story either. Like Devin Williams, if you're bunting in the top of the extra innings on the road, that better be Devin Williams coming out of the bullpen then, because he can strike everyone out and you're not giving up flair singles. Come on.
Yeah, you can't play for one run in an extra inning situation. One run is the given. Like, you have to assume it takes something special to not allow the one run if there is a leadoff runner at second and nobody out. So, for crying out loud, don't make it easier. Don't make it easier. Anyway, actually, bunts will come up later in my remember when, in a good way, in a way that I am confident the bunt actually made a difference.
Where you're going with this.
Maybe. I don't know. The bunting is not the centerpiece of this. Well, it's pretty big. We'll see.
I'm locked in. I got you.
All right. Sounds good. Let's talk about this bullpen. I have questions and, you know, I don't want to rain on a parade a little bit here because ultimately this is a successful week. They took two of three from the Phillies, which is good.
We haven't been very positive.
Oh yeah. They took two or three from the Phillies.
That's positive.
They won a game in which they were trailing 8-0. That's insane.
There you go.
And positive. I don't understand. This bullpen is going to be the thing that they rely on to win in the postseason. And it is not, in my opinion, calibrated as well as it can be. As I look at this, what I think the postseason roster is going to be as we get closer here to the end. And the minor league season ended on Sunday. So realistically, if it isn't changed up on Monday, this is going to be the roster of guys that they take into the postseason, barring injury. And I'm still lost on that. Now, another friend of the show, Jack Stern, had some numbers on what Brian Hudson has been doing at AAA, suggesting that the sweeper is losing some velocity. I know that they're concerned with how he has thrown the ball. I guess I look at his results and I don't see why you would want him not on the major league roster. I mean, he is one of the biggest reasons they're here. It's not it's not necessarily a meritocracy. It's how you're throwing now. It's just, that was one thing that was really missing from that post game celebration on Wednesday is how is Brian Hudson not here of all the people? Like we thought he was an all-star in the first half and he's not there. And I get it. They want him to get better. They want him to be calibrated perfectly, healthy or whatever it is, whatever they're doing at AAA. But I'm starting to get the vibes that they're not going to bring him up for the postseason, which would throw me completely. I didn't even consider that until late this week that was a possibility. I just assumed that Hobie Milner's spot on the roster will belong to Brian Hudson when they get into the postseason. Likewise, it was Nolly Paredes for a while, and now Kevin Hergett. You know, I imagine that spot is the 27th or the extra pitcher that probably doesn't carry into the postseason anyway. But they've got Nick Mears coming off of injury at some point.
Back,
he's going to throw this tomorrow. Week. So, and they've. I know this is a well. People are probably sick of me talking about it. Jacob Mizorowski is shoving at AAA. His numbers don't even tell you how incredible he's been. But the numbers are really good too. And yes, he had a couple starts where he walked three dudes, two of them. That's not a big deal. Like when it just isn't. You know, like it's a really small sample. And if you're looking at just walks, yeah. And especially with your automated strike zone, those are going to crop up. But Jacob Mizorowski, no one can hit him. Like no one can make hard contact with him on any of his pitches. He's incredible. They are seemingly content to not have him here. And I don't understand that. I realize that it is a crowded bullpen. It's crowded. There's a lot of guys who deserve to be here, but you will never convince me that he's not going to be one of their five best bullpen arms going into the postseason. If they don't bring him here now, though, they're not going to. Like, they need to give him some regular season runway. There's six games left. I don't think it's not going to happen. And I don't understand why. I mean, they set him up to be a relief pitcher in this season by bringing him to Nashville to have him just close games. So I know they were thinking about it. They've talked about it in the past. I know they're thinking about it. What do you think it is that they haven't seen or still want to see?
You're trying to get me in trouble.
I'm not
that I was going to stop talking about this.
Do you want to make me the bad guy? You can. I think they're crazy for not having him here already. I think that they have dropped the ball.
Look, I'll.
But there might be something I don't understand. There might be something that they see that I just don't see. That might be the case.
Well, I mean, he's still walking some guy. Like his walk rate overall is not great. But then you look a little closer, and I think 10 of the 13 outings have been without walks, and the average exit velo against him is like 82 to 83 miles an hour, which is nothing. That's like a bunch of self-free like pop outs. Sorry, Sal. It could be anyone pop-outs. Could be Victor Caratini pop-outs.
Sal, by the way, has been so good on defense that I'm over Sal being Sal, Sal's great. Sal's fine.
Sal, this is not gonna fit in my three up, three down. Sal hit a ball 107 this week. 107 miles per hour. Hardest hit of his career.
It was not a barrel, though. It was not a barrel because it was too low to the ground.
Too low. But I actually really like the way he's swinging the bat finally.
Me too.
Now compared to recently. So that's a good time for
and
that.
His defense is incredible. Shouts to Sal. He's been better than I thought he was for a long time.
That's right. Grant Bills is not gonna like that part of the segment. Anyway, Mizorowski, I vowed, I was like, hey, you know, I'm just gonna not bring this up anymore because I think one way and it seems like it's just not gonna happen. There have been opportunities, those opportunities have not been taken. Like I said, there's no guarantee he's one of your best 26, but I'm pretty sure he's got a really good chance of being one of your best, like 12. And you just don't know that until you give him a shot here. But I don't know if a week's time is enough time to give him a shot. And that's sort of the same thing with Brian Hudson now. There are still enough questions about where his stuff is at. Like he was anywhere between like 89 to, I think he touched 92 once in his outing Sunday. He went multiple innings. I think we're going to see him in Pittsburgh. That is sort of just my gut feeling. I mean, the AAA season's done. It feels like if he's not in Pittsburgh, then, you know, write that off. Back. Like, yeah. And not to keep hammering the dead horse on Mizorowski, but I also think, like, if you don't have Hudson, who a month ago you figured to be a huge part of this bullpen, like, and the bullpen is a huge part of this playoff roster, and that's how you're going to have to piece together outs and get wins, you'd think, like, that would make you want to sort of take the shot at Mizorowski and see what you got. I don't care about starting his clock. I don't, you know, like, sure, there's some doubts. What are the long-term ramifications if he fails? Like, okay, yeah, sure. But, like, I don't know. I feel like he's mentally strong enough to handle, you know, a couple bad outings. But, you know, you never know.
The clock doesn't even matter. If they're going to have him on this team next year, which I imagine we think he's going
to be. I'm done. I'm washing my hands.
All right, I have some postscript. The clock doesn't matter. The clock starting now, it doesn't fundamentally change how many years of control he's going to have at this stage of the season. He's not going to be a super two or anything crazy for coming up with six games to go. So if he's going to be on this roster next year, I mean, there is some added roster flexibility if you don't add him to the 40 man. So I guess, but I mean, they're going to lose a ton of guys from the 40 man. Like, that's not really a huge issue if you think he's going to be on this team starting next year. Now, I don't know how that's going to play out, because right now he's being, you know, he's basically being a closer. Do they still want him as a starter? I mean, we would think so, right? So that's kind of a situation where you have to go back to the drawing board next year and have him kind of work back into that role. And that's not necessarily something that'll happen right out of spring training. So that's something to consider. I guess, like, the question I have is, they clearly thought this was going to happen because they brought him to Nashville to do something different than he'd been doing all year. Yes, it also keeps his innings low. Nice side product. But it seems like they were ramping him up to be a part of this bullpen, and then they shifted gears. And it's not because he hasn't been awesome, because he's been awesome. So either they decided, look, we just have too many good guys and we don't need this, which I still feel like is selling Jacob Mizorowski short. Or they said to themselves, there is something here that we are not comfortable with yet. We feel like he could implode if he gets into the big leagues. That would surprise me. Like, I don't know whether that's a crazy evaluation to me, but they know baseball better than I do. And they have done very well at finding relievers and hitting on just the right guys and when and stuff like that. Jared Koenig is throwing 98 miles an hour. I should absolutely trust how they figure out bullpen pieces. But that one still escapes me a little bit. And it isn't just because I want the shiny new toy. It's just,
it's
one of their best guys.
It's because I want the shiny new toy.
But, okay.
But I have moved on. I am prepared for this playoff bullpen being the group that it is. Like, you still feel great about Devin Williams. You feel pretty dang good about Piamps. You feel good about McGill, right?
You do indeed. Absolutely. Great hammers.
You feel pretty dang good about Ashby. You feel
100%
solid on DL Hall. Like, right?
If DL Hall makes it, he could be the surprise guy who doesn't make it. I could see that.
No, DL Hall's making it. DL Hall's making it for sure.
Okay. Unquestionably, that is a good enough group. It is a good enough group. I think it could be a little better, but that's all. That's all. We can stop.
Just because you don't know what you're getting from your. I mean, this goes to a greater Brewers question, though. You don't know what you're getting from your starters.
Correct.
It is ultimately going to be quite difficult to piece together. How many wins do they need? 13 wins with the rotation as it is in the playoffs. Now, different ball game. You're not sending these guys through the lineup a third time. I don't want to see unless Freddie Peralta has like a shutout going and they're up by four. I don't want to see anyone face a lineup a third time. Don't want to see it. Want nothing to do with it. That should not happen under almost any circumstances.
I think, especially if they get through the first two games of the postseason, that one of Aaron Ashby or DL Hall will start a game in the postseason. I think that's where we're headed for sure.
Yeah. I only want to see DL Hall out of the bullpen right now simply because it could be a two inning outing no matter what, but that's just where I want to see him. I can't really explain it, but I don't want to see him starting. Just put him in the fourth inning.
Agreed. I like that too. Before we move to 3-up-3 down, any other roster decisions that you're still thinking about, like not related to the bullpen, just anything else that you don't know the answer to with six games to go?
The number of position players they're going to keep. JR, this bench is.
It's not good, Kurt.
I don't know how to describe it. This is the weakest bench the Brewers have had since like 2001.
And one of their best bench players, maybe their best bench player, is a third catcher.
That is correct. So, yes. Are they going to do that? Yes. I mean, like, Andrew Monasterio is still here just because, like, there's no one else.
I've seen enough on Andrew Monasterio, because part what makes him good is his versatility, but he cannot play third base, or he couldn't this week. And I know he can, but like, much weaker arm than any other option. He really struggled in the field. He cannot hit. Like, they have no other option. So of course he's going to make it, right? He has to. But like,
of course, the fact that he's still here despite like doing absolutely nothing for 2 months. But he's a right-handed player who's great in the clubhouse and can stand at different positions. So, is Isaac Collins going to make the playoff roster? Okay, he could pinch run, I guess.
Andrew Monasterio maybe can bunt.
Tyler Black not being here, despite the Brewers getting like -1 WAR production from their first base this year, not a great sign. Don't love that. The bench just isn't good. And I don't really know how else to sugarcoat that. So it kind of makes the playoff like roster question less fun to think about, because like, oh, are they, because last year they carried 15 position players. Well, do they have 15 position players in the in the 40 man in the organization that you would feel comfortable with scribbling their name in a playoff roster and putting them in some role? No, they have 13 up here right now, right? 13. Yeah. And or is it 14? They have 14 up here right now?
Yeah.
With the extra man?
It's 14. It's 14 right now with the extra man.
And even that feels like there's just like some redundancy. Now, who knows? Maybe they do carry 15. Maybe they call up like Brewer Hicklin to pinch run or something. But the way the pitching is built, I'd rather use those bullets on guys that can give you length, like Colin Ray, in case you need him.
Is there someone we're not thinking about who could be here, like in AAA? Somebody, some position player that we're not considering? I don't think so.
Wes Clark.
Wes Clark. Probably not. But
you moved on from that. Quite fast.
Vinny Capra. I did. I would move on. I mean, truthfully, I would move on from most of the big leaguers right now pretty quickly. I thought maybe Tyler Black could take like a, I mean, for a while, I thought maybe he's the Jake Bowers guy, but you got to have some defense at first base. I you know, like you said, Tyler Black hasn't been here. Jake Bowers has been here all year. So it's going to be Jake Bowers. And unless Black is here on Tuesday in Pittsburgh, I don't see how there's any way he's here.
You know what would be kind of fun? I thought Carlos Rodriguez stole a lot of bases. Never mind. He's really fast, but he only had 17 steals this year. So
sad. Well, Black could be your base runner. I mean, he is fast.
Black's not like a super duper duper great base runner.
Right. I know.
Like, you're calling up a guy to, you know, throw him in the fire as a pinch runner. I guess he might be here, but.
I really thought Tyler Black.
You're not lifting your 9 guy. There's a couple spots that are you could substitute, but you're not lifting 8 of the 9 guys from the lineup.
Right.
I don't want Garrett Mitchell taken out under any circumstance. Almost any circumstance.
He'll still get taken out against the lefty late in the game. Pretty often.
He got the lefty on Sunday, and he got the hit. I mean,
yeah, against Mantiply.
Maybe if Gary's available and swinging it better, but I don't know. Right now, I like what Gary Mitchell's given you. You got to keep that kid in the game.
Yeah. Well, and obviously he's great defensively, so you also want that in the game. Although I know you have Blake Perkins, but that's still. I'm wondering if they've got the offensive depth to do this. You know, they're going to need some people to really come through that have not come through consistently to string together, like you said, 13 wins. And I don't know, man. I think the offense is okay. I think it's capable, but it feels like those holes are going to get exposed really quickly when we get into the postseason. All right, let's go to some of the more granular details from the week. This was a crazy week as well. This is 3 up, 3 down. Do you want to go first, Kurt?
Sure. I mean, we kind of talked about it a little already, but Jake Bowers capping off the clinch day with the walk-off single. It has not been good for Jake Bowers. Ever since I sung his praises as a consistent guy, despite the strikeouts, you know what happens sometimes when you keep swinging and missing at a 40% clip is the good results go away. And that's what's happened ever since I opened my big fat mouth. But he did provide two of the three biggest hits of the week. And honestly made clinch day so much more fun for those guys because they won that game and got to celebrate a walk-off. They probably still would have had fun. I guarantee they still would have had fun. But a clinch after a loss, we did that. We had that last year. I guess it was still fun, but like ultimately it's more like looking back at it. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. I would say the clinch after the loss didn't feel markedly different from other celebrations that the Brewers have had. You know, this one was just, it was just the fulfillment of knowing you got the division locked up and you get to celebrate a walk-off. Like it was a natural big boost of energy, you know, middle of the week, the place wasn't sold out or anything. So it maybe, you know, it probably wasn't as vibrant as some of those early clinch ceremonies, but whatever, like they, you know, there's only 10 guys who played in last year's postseason on this roster. You know, it moves very, very quickly. And if you go back to the 2021 postseason, there's three guys who are on this active roster. And if you go back to 20, there's one guy. There's Freddy Peralta, who played in the 2020 postseason. He will be, by the way, if he pitches in the postseason, which of course we assume he will, tie Ryan Braun for the most postseasons appeared in for the Milwaukee Brewers with 5. He did not pitch in the 2019 wildcard game, but has seen, of course, 18, 20, 21, 23, and now 24. Okay, I got a lot of stuff from the clinch and this last game, but I'm going to go back to the very beginning of the week, Monday. JT Realmuto hits a double, and Rhys Hoskins, his teammate, runs after him while basically chasing him between first and second. Realmuto sticks his hand out and like kind of pushes his face away while he's getting into second base. I just, I don't think we ever got a chance to remark upon how surreal it must have been for Rhys Hoskins to be facing the Phillies now at this critical juncture of the year and then to clinch against the Phillies. You know, there was a scenario going into Wednesday where the Phillies and Brewers both clinched. In fact, it was not very complicated. All it really took was the Cubs losing, which they did, and then the Phillies winning. And then they both could have been having champagne celebrations at the exact same time at American Family Field. My joke was, will Rhys Hoskins like float between the parties? Why not? I mean, it's all one big celebratory mood, right? Are they going to share champagne? You know, like, why not? You know, it's cool. It's cool. Rhys Hoskins has been, as we've talked about, it has not been a good year for him. He has still come up with some clutch hits today. It was a half swing that brought in a couple runs and tied the game. That was an important, obviously an important moment. He has come through a fair amount. It's a little like Orlando Arcia when, you know, he wasn't going very well, but it seemed like every hit was a big hit. I do feel like that's Rhys Hoskins a little bit. I still think there's a playoff moment in there. It's possible. And it's cool. The Phillies thing is kind of cool, I think.
I'll go with the Hobie Assants. What in the world is happening there? Hobie
Miller, back.
I mean, we shouldn't quite rule him out for the playoff roster. I still think he's on the outside looking in, but...
How can we? He's been great.
He was both great in escaping what seemed to be a disaster, impending disaster in Monday's win over the Phillies. The lineup was set up for failure for Aaron Civale. Third time through, Kyle Schwarber at the top. It's like, oh boy, here we go. And sure enough, that's what happened. But Hobie Milner came in, saved that inning. The next one didn't quite go so well, but someone bailed him out of that. Don't remember who it was. And then he's just pitched pretty well, like really well the rest of the week, making you scratch your head just a little bit. I mean, like the peripheral numbers were still good when he was really struggling, and it seemed like the Brewers would be done with him, maybe should be done with him. And now it's teetering back the other way a little bit. I'm still not sure how he fits into the playoff role. I guess Nick Mears coming back is a big question left there, but just good to see. Good to see Hobie coming back. I think we wrote him off on this podcast. Shame on us. It was because of Hobie. It was because of your boy Miz.
Yeah,
realistically, we just wanted to see Miz, and I think Milner was the last guy in the bullpen. But you know what? He's shoving once again and shoving it up our face.
Yeah, well, it's a lefty thing too. They've got Deal Hall, Aaron Ashby, and presumably Brian Hudson. They've got lefties. They're loaded for bear.
And Jared Koenig.
Oh gosh, jeez, I apologize.
Yeah, so yeah, they do have a ton of lefties, and like this is the issue with the Diamondbacks too, is you want to play with fire and keep bringing these lefties in. Well, here's Randall Grichuk to bash your head in once again.
Yeah, he's got a weird swing, Randall Grichuk. He just kind of like, I don't know,
but short he beats arms, him every. Yeah, I know. But he beats does. Him every time,
and the contact every is not time. Soft. Yeah,
no.
He's
it's like, what if Harrison Bader? What if Harrison Bader was good? Is what I think when I watch him hit.
That's definitely not a thought that I had. I do not think of Harrison Bader and Randall Grichuk anywhere in the same mindset, except right now. Okay, highlight from the clinch ceremony: Jackson Chourio had a stroller full of non-alcoholic beverages brought to his locker. It was in there in the clubhouse after went during the celebration. Bob Nightingale, USA Today, one of our, I think we can call him a colleague. I think so, Bob. Not sure.
Yeah, friend of the show. Internet.
Sure, let's call him that. Internet famous Bob Nightingale for a variety of things.
Do you think that Bob's not a friend of the show?
I mean,
we see him in Arizona. I guess, but he is a friend of.
We can get him on the pod, right?
Sure, Bob would love to come on the pod.
Let's do it. Especially if he's covering that first series somehow. I mean, not somehow. It's possible. 1-in-4 shot, right? Let's get Bob on the pod. Bob Nightingale wrote about it. He wrote about Jackson Chourio, only being 20 years old and not being able to partake in the celebration to the same degree as other players. Of course, yes, players drink during this ceremony, but it's also just like all they're doing is shaking up these bottles and letting it spray everywhere. Like very little of it is getting consumed. It's all going to the floor pretty much. But I thought that was a nice touch, a stroller recognizing Jackson Chourio's extremely young age. Very funny. Bob Uecker, of course, he was in the clubhouse as he always is for these ceremonies. And he's always a treat, bringing his brand of humor and endearingness and just Milwaukee icon status. It's pretty sweet. So those were the two takeaways, the two sidebar stories I wrote off the clinch ceremony.
I feel like we haven't talked about this 8-0 comeback enough.
Considering
it just happened like 4 hours ago, 3 hours ago. Today's been a whirlwind. I don't know how long ago it was. All I know is it was wild. The Brewers didn't really like have any. They didn't have any rally killing homers. You know, that was probably the key. I just kept kind of line by lining this thing together. So many little moments in that, like Jackson Chourio taking a walk, Garrett Mitchell getting that left on left hit, the bullpen coming through. Like when Frankie Montas left with two outs in the third, they were teetering on like full on disaster. Aaron Ashby was in the game, and I think he went 3-0 on Pavin Smith left on left with Ketel Marte, who is God against left-handed pitchers. It was like, oh, this could get really bad. And then sure enough, they settled down and the bullpen did the job. And another thing from this game, why are foul tips not reviewable? We've talked about this. This is insane. If a guy,
this is actually where I was going with my next one. So yes, carry on.
Insanity. Pat Murphy said the umpire told him that he heard two tips early on, and Pat was like, yeah, the glove and the shin guard. And then the umpire told them that, you know, none of the umpires got it either. You know, if it had been a swing and a miss, the umpires would have seen it, surely. And Pat goes, no, they wouldn't have. They're all asleep. So this on the heels of getting tossed after screaming about fun dip during Saturday's game.
What?
No, he was saying,
I don't know anything about the fun dip. Okay. Okay. I didn't hear that. Yeah. That quote.
No, just other F words, JR.
Fun dip.
You got it. Good job. Yeah. What a weird game. I don't even remember what else happened. It was wild. The Brewers won.
They did. So what you're referring to is, Jared Koenig had a guy struck out, and
it was Marte.
Gary Sanchez didn't catch the ball, so the umpire
had a terrible game behind the plate. Two catchers interference and missed that ball.
Truly a tough game. Tough. Umpire misunderstood the tip, the double tip, as you mentioned, and thought it was a foul ball. It was not. So on the very next pitch, Marte hits this screamer down the third baseline. And Joey Ortiz made an unbelievable play. Oh my God, Joey Ortiz's arm is golden. He makes an unbelievable highlight reel play, one of the legitimate best defensive plays of the year. And he gets the out, which is good, but Christian Walker in the process moves from first to second. Christian Walker would have stayed on first if Ketel Marte had just struck out, as should have been the case. Next batter, I think I have this backwards. I think Walker's the one who gets the hit. He did. So Walker's the one who gets the single to score that run that would have otherwise just gone first to third. Next guy gets out. The run shouldn't have scored. And ultimately, that's one more run that they have to hurdle over in the eighth inning when they rack up that big rally. Now, it worked out because they won the game, of course, but that's not a run they shouldn't have had to answer for. Made things a little more dicey in the ninth when it was runner at second with one out. Devin Williams facing some of the better hitters in this lineup. But Devin Williams, of course, came through and the Brewers prevailed 10-9. So, yeah, that's where I was going to go, but I'll close it down here. Another scene from the clinch ceremony, Willy Adames. The spirit of Hernan Perez is alive and well, Kurt, because Jake Bowers gets that walk-off hit. He's giving an interview with Sophia Minert out near second base, and here comes Willy Adames. He's got a Gatorade full of water. That is not an easy thing to carry, especially on a light jog from the dugout to second base, but he did it. Somehow managed to not catch Bowers' eye and got the full-fledged, you know, pour right on Jake Bowers during this post-game interview. Hernan Perez, of course, famously did something like that during the 2018 postseason against the Rockies when Mike Moustakas hit a walk-off to win game one, I'm pretty sure, of that series. We ran all the way out to the outfield to try to throw some water down on Mike Moustakas. He missed and got Ryan Braun instead. Tough times. But Hernan Perez, the beloved Hernan Perez, definitely saw some shades of that as Willy Adames tried to sort of walk in his footsteps.
Sure, but beloved if you hate really bad plate appearances.
Did we just disparage Andrew Monasterio? Did we just disparage the utility infielder who has only such limited utility? Is that what's happening? Did I make a mistake?
Hernan Perez was like a legitimate plus defender, and he could play the outfield too. So, and he had some pop, some like actual pop. So, his plate discipline was just bad. It was just bad.
Yeah, he liked to swing, Kurt. He was not there to take a walk. But
and you know what? I respect that.
You know what? Andrew Monasterio has good vibes. We'll go back to the vibes. He's a good dude.
Great
He's
vibes.
Great.
If your locker is between Freddie and Willie and Churio and Contreras, guess what? You ain't going down.
The vibes will be with you. No.
You're staying here. So good for him. I'm happy for him.
We like him. Tremendous person. I really hope they don't need him in the postseason. All right. Are we done? Anything else you want to throw in?
No, I think, well, we probably didn't get to everything because this week was wacky, but
it was crazy. Yeah. Some defensive plays. Bryce Terang made another like crazy,
insane,
impossible play. 2-1 game. That was only one of them. He had one in the Diamondback series too. Like, it's just, I mean, we could pretend like we get, like it blows our minds, but it doesn't. He always does it. I got to say, Kurt, I don't think he's going to win a Gold Glove. And I
people need to get ready for this.
They do. Here's why you need to get ready. I mean, this doesn't really tell you anything, but Dalton Varsho, who is a Wisconsinite and ergo someone I care deeply about, has led the all of baseball in DRS last year as a center fielder. He is truly, truly elite. He is as good as it gets. Did not win a Gold Glove. Just as the year before. Did not win a Gold Glove.
Dalton Varsho has never won a Gold Glove?
Never won a Gold Glove. The year before, the man played catcher and center field. They made a utility Gold Glove and did not give it to Dalton Varsho.
We as a society need to move past Gold Gloves, yet we can't do it, and I can't do it either. Like, I still care about them.
I do too. The players care.
We need to move past it, but we can't. But we can't.
There has to be some way to honor defense, but it is just such a weirdly subjective process. And I got to tell you, I know we make fun of the offense thing. Bryce Terang is not going to win any tiebreakers with anybody else. If they see anybody else who's even remotely capable on defense, they're going to give it to that guy at second base because that guy can probably hit a little bit better than Bryce Terang. And I really think he's going to lose it. Now, maybe because he had such a special first half, maybe that lingers in the minds of the voters a little bit. But people do need to prepare themselves for, you know, get your pitchforks ready, because I don't think he's going to win a Gold Glove, even though he has been wowing us all year long. That's just my thought. Hope I'm wrong.
Well, the electorate for this, I'm not sure. We've talked about voting and awards in the past. I don't know if Gold Gloves are decided in the best way. Like they use that saber defensive index too. And I'm sure we could look up what goes into it, but I feel like in the past I've had some qualms with that. Then again, we've had our qualms with OAA. Defense turns out, by the way. Oh, go ahead.
Speaking of OAA, Dalton Varsho also led all center fielders in OAA last year. So everyone
loved him. Everyone loved him. Okay.
Except the people who vote for the Gold Glove.
Yeah, which is largely like coaching staffs and the like and players, I believe. So, just get used to, the Brewers don't win Gold Gloves. That is what history says. So yeah. It takes something insane for them to win a Gold Glove. And this does qualify as insane. But unfortunately, like, I don't even know what the numbers are, but it feels like Nico Horner's going to win it, and that's just vibes.
I think Joey Ortiz has a decent shot, too. I think he might be. There's a chance he's a finalist, but yeah.
Matt Chapman exists?
Well, no, I don't think he's going to win. Oh, I think he's going to be a finalist. I think there's a chance he's a finalist.
I don't think he's going to get nearly enough recognition. Like, okay. He should be, no doubt. He's like the Brewers currently have, I don't want to slander anyone who I'm forgetting about, but I feel like they currently have the best defensive third baseman and best defensive second baseman I've ever seen them have. Am I missing someone? Ryan Braun, perhaps? There has to be someone I'm forgetting about at third base, right?
Just say Ryan Braun. You got me stuck here. I don't think Jim Gantner, if we could compare the two, would ever.
I didn't see Jim Gantner. So
yeah. No, I can't think of anybody in recent history who had. I mean, Corey Koski came in with a pretty good pedigree at third base, but he didn't play for very long.
Yadiel Rivera. And also,
I mean, Alcides Escobar was really good, but he's a shortstop. And by the way, Willy Adames at shortstop has not been bad lately. We've seen the errors go away.
The slump is over. That's what it was. I'm calling it a slump.
I like it. That's really good news for the Brewers. We have to get moving. We're running.
Yeah,
out
but
of time
we're
here.
Talking about defense. Come on, man. The people can it's stay true. For the defense.
It's true. We do love defense. It's going if the Brewers win the World Series, it will be because of defense. So I suppose it's something that we should probably talk about as much as
there will be. There will be a game winning catch to end the World Series.
Sal Frelick. Sal Frelick is going to hit a home run in the postseason. That's my irrational take.
That's your year off the rocker irrational take.
That's my I had a vision and I have this belief that has no basis in reality. I just feel it. I feel it. He homered twice in like three games and hasn't homered before or since.
Are you sure it wasn't back to back games for him?
It might have been. We should go back to the game log.
Either way,
it was so long ago.
It was like the same homestand. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. I want to say it was the same series.
I was just trying to rack my brain to like match that, you know, that irrational playoff take that I firmly believe.
Tell me.
And you know what? There's nothing. You have done it.
May 14th, May 15th, back-to-back days, both against Pittsburgh, Sal Frelick hit home runs in both games. He has not homered since.
He has not.
How many are his RBI? He does not have 30 RBIs this season. Oh, how is that possible?
No, he got one. He got one today. He's up to 30.
He got one today. That's right. He has hit 30. He took 465 at bats to get there.
It was a hard hit ball too.
I'm telling you, the arrow's pointing up on Sal Frelick.
I am not giving up on Sal Frelick showing up to camp stronger and with more bat speed next year. And suddenly you're like, yes, he's hitting 10 homers. Get ready for it.
I think that's right. They believe in him very strongly. And I do trust their judgment on that front. So, I think I'm ready. He's going to hit a postseason home run. And when he does, I might faint. I might never predict anything again. That's going to be the win for me. I'm also predicting Tigers Brewers World Series after the Tigers have snuck their way back into the AL wildcard conversation. Let's go back
snuck
in time.
Their way.
We have to. I mean, they've just been mashing.
They're in it now. They're in the playoff picture.
They have a game. They have a game lead on Minnesota and they're tied with Kansas City. They are like in good position. They have a magic number now. So, this is big. We have some Tigers fandom in this household, so it's especially big here. But let's go back in time. Enough of this. We're going to go back to in history here, Brewers history. It is the weekly segment of Remember When. Okay, so the last time the Brewers rallied from an 8-run deficit. You have to go back to April 28th, 2004. This is a game that is near and dear to my heart. I watched it in a college class. I was extremely young because it's 2004. And remember it. I mean, I'm watching on the ESPN Gamecast. This is, I think, even before MLB.com had like this advanced Gamecast system. Certainly did not in Indiana, certainly did not get this game on TV or radio. So that's all I had. And watched this while I should have been in this night class that I was in. This is against the Cincinnati Reds. It is a truly remarkable game. This is a game in which the Brewers went down 9-0 by the top of the fourth. Matt Kinney was pitching. Matt Kinney did not fare well. It was bad. Prepare yourself for several other remember some guys in this conversation, because Matt Kinney definitely kicks that off. So how did they get back into it? Well, Lyle Overbay singled in the fourth. That was nice. The next time they scored a run, it was Lyle Overbay again. He doubled in the sixth. It's 9-2. No concern yet. But then Ben Grieve hits a 2-run homer against Paul Wilson in the sixth. That makes it 9-4. Grieve had 3 RBIs entering that point, late April, last couple of days of April. And then he gets 2-on-1 swing. Jeff Jenkins has an RBI double in the seventh with 2 outs. Lyle Overbay's RBI single scores Jenkins. Now it's 9-6. Now we're cooking with gas. And then in the eighth inning, it's Bill Hall. Let's revisit what happened the night before. Chad Moeller hit for the cycle the night before this game. But that game was only won because Bill Hall hit a walk-off home run. Incredible moment in Bill Hall's career. Hits a walk-off home run. Bill Hall comes up again here in the eighth inning and clears the bases in the eighth to tie the game at 9. He hits a double. Clears the bases. We're tied in the eighth inning. Now, Bill Hall tried to score basically the go-ahead run, like what the Brewers did, where they came all the way back and took the lead in the eighth. Brooks Kieschnick, who threw 3 strong innings on the hill, of course, known in Brewers history as a two-way player. Brooks Kieschnick got a hit, and Bill Hall tried to score. That didn't happen. He got thrown out at the plate. Much like in this game, the game on Sunday, there was an out at the plate that could have made things easier on the Milwaukee Brewers. Craig Counsell, by the way, came in to pinch run for Brooks Kieschnick. Shout out to Craig Counsell. Shout outs to you. Tough season. Kieschnick, again, like I said, was very good. Brady Clark got caught stealing to end the ninth, but Dave Burba threw a 1-2-3 tenth. So that sets the stage in the bottom of the 10th. Australian Trent Durrington leads off the inning with a double. Scott Posednik. Oh, I have your attention now, Kurt Hoge. Scott Posednik.
Yes. Yes. I'm bunts. Sorry. You said my name.
He bunts. And that gets Durrington to third, but he bunted. So now we've gone from runner at second and nobody out. Yes. I see the bobblehead up on that shelf. Of course. Of course I do. You have so many Scott Posednik up there. He bunted. So then Bill Hall is up again. Bill Hall, who hit a 3-run double in the eighth, the game-winning homer the night before. And what does Bill Hall do in this at-bat, you ask yourself? He bunts too. He bunts back-to-back bunts. Leadoff double, bunt him to third, bunt him home. It's a squeeze play against Todd Van Poppel to win the game. Bill Hall, who had just hit a walk-off homer the night before and a 3-run double to tie the game in the eighth, he bunts. And it's a winner. It's a walk-off squeeze bunt. Back-to-back walk-off winners for Bill Hall. I think there's 3 guys in Brewers history who've done that in back-to-back games. Very impressive. Jason LaRue, by the way, the Cincinnati Reds, who had 4 hits in this game. This was a huge game for him. In the ninth, he tried bunting and got hit in the hand by Dan Kolb. So he left the game. Folks, you should never bunt. He actually struck out then while he was in the trainer's room because Brandon Larson came in to take his place, but it counted on LaRue's ledger. So that was a bummer. So they were down their catcher. But yes, wild, insane 10-9 walk-off win at Miller Park, then Miller Park. Just a wild time. Now, 2004 was not a good season for the Brewers. The April magic definitely did not last. But Bill Hall was just here. I don't know if it was his homestand or the last one, but he was just at the stadium the other day hanging around. So that's cool. I think he was shown on TV a couple times. Love Bill Hall. All right. That's it. That's back in time. We had bunts. We had big comebacks. We had everything you could hope for. And now we're going to close it down the way we have to every week. It's Kurt's Take of the Week. Here it is, Kurt Blanche.
You could not have remembered any more guys.
Once I've hit Dave Burba, you know that I have gone as deep as this rabbit hole will take me.
That's a great immaculate. Yeah, the Aussie. That's a great immaculate grid name, by the way. Dave Burba, Rick Helling is up there too. Okay, now we've maxed out on remembering guys. Jared, there was
Rick Helling had an immaculate inning for the Brewers and then gave up a home run gave up a home run on the 10th pitch, leading off the second, and the Brewers got clobbered. But Rick Helling had an immaculate first inning. Lovely, lovely time.
What a king. Jared, there's been a lot of fan discourse over the last week, last couple weeks, last 3 weeks. And you know what? Honestly, like, it's not, it's coming from the manager.
I don't understand.
It's not coming from the internet. Like it's just discussion of Brewers fans and making noise and coming to the games. Like, I don't know. I feel like we've had Pat Murphy talking a lot about the noise in the ballpark and if the crowd sizes are, you know, up to snuff or up to what they want, or if they're making enough noise. And I don't really know what to make of it other than to say, like, what are the fans supposed to do when the offense has scored like 3 runs in 4 games? What are you supposed to do?
I can tell you what I think is happening there. I think they're worried that the playoff games aren't going to draw very well because they're going to be midweek wild card round games. And we've seen this before.
You're reading between the lines on the marketing. Very smart. Although Pat Murphy doesn't strike me as a man to push marketing narratives, but I do think maybe deep down he's like, yeah, are they going to come for the playoffs? Are we going to have any fans there?
I mean, of course we'll have fans there. I think it's a real question, though. I mean, I don't believe they sold out both Diamondbacks games. Pretty sure they sold out the second one. I know they sold out one of the two. I don't think the first one, it was still like 40. It was still a good crowd, or 39. I don't even know the threshold.
I will tell you my thoughts on the situation. The Brewers did not get eliminated last year because and it did not have anything to do with the crowds.
I agree.
That said, I mean, there is like a question of like, you know, could they make a big difference? Like, you know, you think of what they do in Philly. Could it really put them over the top? Maybe. But also, you know what? This team has lost, 8 of its last 9 playoff games. And you know what human nature tells you to do? Like, I'm not going to get burned again. I will get my hopes up when you give me a reason to. And that's probably means winning the first series. So I think that's valid. I think that's very valid. Is it maybe super rational? I don't know. I can't speak to that, but valid for sure.
I think it's 9 of 10, isn't it? Lost 9 of 10 playoff games, counting 2018 game 7.
A lot. Yeah, a lot of playoff games. A lot of bad games.
A lot of playoff games.
A lot of early exits. So, you know, maybe this team's different. They have a different manager. They have different vibes. But ultimately, I'll believe it when I see it. It's not that I don't think this team can do it. There's valid reasons they can win a World Series for sure, and I'm all in on that. I will just believe it when I see them win a playoff game first.
And a playoff series, you know, like that hasn't been done.
Right. Yeah. That would be a successful year. I mean, look, grand picture, this is a successful year no matter what. They won the division, they continued to dominate the Central. That holds some value for sure. Like, you get to enjoy 6 months of great baseball and then some fun playoff games too.
Yeah.
But you gotta win sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about bites of the apple, right? And I know people obviously hate that scenario, but David Stearns, who might be here in Milwaukee for the newest bite of the apple, the whole idea there is that get in the dance all these times and one of them you're going to break through, you know, like the Packers did in 2010 when they were the bottom seed in the NFC and made it through and won the Super Bowl. You keep getting those chances because one of these times something random is going to happen and you're going to do it. At some point you got to do it. Like you have to capitalize on the moment in front of you. So I do think people are going to, I don't want to say apathetic. The fans are going to be here. There will be plenty of fans.
I do think there's some more juice back in around the team this year.
I think so
not,
too.
Not to say it was juiceless last year, but you know, the way 22 ended really kind of did have some carryover. And you know, 2021 was a great season, but it felt very different than 2018, and naturally so. And 2019 was also a different year and they didn't play at home in the playoffs. So
yeah,
it feels like not quite like 2018, but sort of like if 2017 had been really, really good.
That's a really good comp. I like that. I agree with you. The attendance is still down a little bit, surprisingly, in my opinion, because it doesn't feel like the attendance is down. But I think you're right. I think there's an energy here because maybe they weren't supposed to do this. You know, it's not house money because Brewers fans have seen the Brewers go to the playoffs over and over and over again, and they feel like, okay, are we going to just do the same thing again? Or is this actually going to be a little bit of a breakthrough? I think the likely answer is that they win a series and then go down in the divisional series. Like that's like the median outcome, I think, if you play this out, however many times you play it out. But will that be a success for people? I don't know. Probably not. It probably should be. I mean, depends on how exciting that divisional series win is. And maybe that re-sparks what they have going into next season when they should be, I think, a little bit better perceptively. They might have some more starting pitching options at that point. So, well, I don't know. I don't know. We got lots of time to talk about next year. There's a lot of interesting for next year. But we will obviously wait and see. Kurt, any last thoughts before we shut it down for the week? Last week of regular season baseball, buddy.
No thoughts here. I'm going to Pittsburgh, which means no thoughts.
What does the weather forecast have for you right now? Do you have weather forecast?
Pain and rain.
Really? Is that it? That's just the assumption.
Yes, all 3 days. No, I'm dead serious.
Wonderful. You know what's great for a team when they're pushing toward the playoffs is to have the penultimate series of the year rained out. That's not going to create any sort of problems whatsoever. Build a roof. All right, that's enough. We're going to be done. And we will catch you again next week previewing whatever comes next. Obviously, all indications are that would be the wild card series, and we will preview the opponent, preview where we think the Brewers' roster decisions stand, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you know where to find us, and we'll talk to you again next week on Micro Brew. Thank you for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.